You're listening to Civic Media. You can tune into any of our live shows on any radio station across the state with the Civic Media app. Find us in your phone's app store and listen anytime, anywhere.
Local voices, statewide impact. It's Daybreak with Brian and Jamie.
It's 8:06 right now. Thank you so much for joining us today. And good morning. You are listening to the Civic Media Network. Some winter weather headed our way. So if you are out and about today with those high winds, or even if you have plans to travel this weekend, please take it easy. My name is Jamie Martinson.
And I'm Brian Noonan. Remember to gas up the snow thrower because you will need it come Sunday. You won't be driving, which is good news, because if you have been in your car over the last couple of weeks, it's impossible not to see how much prices have jumped since the war in Iran started. On average, drivers are paying 20% more than before the strikes began. And according to AAA, the average price for a gallon of gas is $3.63 nationally, $3.32 here in Wisconsin, which, as hard as it might be to believe, is one of the 10 least expensive gasoline markets in the country. So, spring break travel time is here. No end in sight for the war. How bad are things going to get? Nick Jarmus is the Regional Director of Public Affairs for AAA, and he joins us now for an update. Nick, thanks for being here this morning. I know you guys don't make predictions, but based on the past and based on things you've seen and the AAA has tracked, is there a point, no matter how long things go, that will be the tipping point for gas where it's, we've never seen it go above X?
I mean, it is possible. I wouldn't rule anything out. You know, right now here in Wisconsin, we're sitting at about $3.32 as our statewide average. And that's still a full $1.60 off of our all-time high of $4.92, which was set back in June of 2022. So we've still got a lot of running room before we get to unprecedented prices.
Okay.
The point we're at right now is pretty much where we were at this time back in 2024. So nothing that anyone hasn't seen before, but you know, unless something begins to change soon, we're probably going to continue to see that go up. How high it goes and how steep that trajectory is, you know, depends a lot on factors on the ground.
For states like Wisconsin, where people do rely heavily on driving, I mean, we have some very rural areas, not a lot of public transportation. You can't do the drive share in some of those areas. What kind of financial impact do these higher prices have on Wisconsin travelers compared to states where they do have more public transportation, say?
You know, I don't know that I have any data to quantify that.
Sure.
I mean, certainly, public transportation tends to have more fixed prices. It becomes a problem for those transit agencies because they're purchasing fuel as well. And so if the prices are higher over an extended period of time, there's a greater chance they'll be adjusting their fares to accommodate for that. But, you know, just based on what we see people in terms of changing their habits, we really don't see people changing their habits until prices get well above $4 a gallon. And even then, back in 2022, when we saw the all-time record high prices, we still saw year-over-year increases in the number of people taking road trips and summer vacations. People factor it in and they figure out a way to make it work. Maybe they'll try and reduce some of their day-to-day driving by, you know, combining errands or just adjusting things. There's also a number of different tips that we have for people to increase their fuel economy to help offset higher prices. It is a burden, but it's not something that necessarily changes people's habits until we get well above where we are right now.
Nick, you mentioned the prices being similar to the spring of 2024. And we know, we talked about this the other day, that this is the time of year when gas prices usually do go up incrementally. What similarities are there to what was going on in spring of 2024? And do you think part of the shock is that it's just the gas prices have jumped up so fast in such a short amount of time?
Yeah, I mean, when you take all other factors out and the, you know, global events and things like that, we typically see this sort of trend where prices begin to go up at this time of year. They peak in the summer months, you know, when you have the maximum number of people out there on the roads, both on a day-to-day basis, as well as taking their summer vacations. And then prices come down in the fall and, you know, kind of bottom out in the winter. So we were already seeing prices begin to go up a little bit, even before the conflict began 2 weeks ago. But certainly that has exacerbated it and really spiked up the prices well beyond what they would have otherwise. There's no way around that. Even if the conflict were to somehow end tomorrow and the straits were reopened and things started getting back to normal, we may see, you know, the rate of increase go down. We may even see prices come down a bit. We probably won't see them come down to what they were before the conflict started, just because there still is going to be that seasonal supply and demand, you know, or demand side of the equation that's going to push them up a little bit at this time of year.
We're talking with Nick Jarmus. He is the Regional Director of Public Affairs for AAA Wisconsin. And as we're talking here this morning, you mentioned that, you know, even if the conflict ended today, things would maybe come down. How long does it usually take for those markets to balance out? I mean, I know this conflict is fresh. We don't know when there's an end sight right now. But how long does it generally take for things to balance out once, we'll say, maybe normalize or stabilize, maybe a better word?
You know, it's difficult to say in general because every situation is unique. And it's important to remember, you know, in this case, the increases in prices we're seeing domestically at the pump, you know, are not a reflection of any shortage of gasoline that we're facing. It's because of the global oil markets. So, you know, there are a number of different factors that go into what the price we pay at the pump and disruptions along any segment of the supply chain, you know, internationally or domestically at refineries or at pipeline distributions can impact things. But the bulk of the price that we pay is a reflection, direct reflection of global oil prices. And right now we're, you know, sitting around that $100 a barrel mark. And that, you know, how quickly that comes down is going to be a reflection of not just how much, you know, change in the status quo there is, but how confident the markets are that change is durable and going to continue in the right direction, and that it's not, you know, some sort of temporary blip or temporary reprieve.
Speaking of temporary reprieves, the administration announced they're going to release 172 million barrels of oil from the strategic reserve over 4 months. Is there any way that amount then trickles down to the consumer where we might see, you know, a few cents come off? Or is that such a drop in the bucket as to what we really need that it's not going to change anything for us?
You know, I think it depends. What's probably more likely is that will help kind of stem the tide, and it'll slow, if not maybe kind of stop, the increases. I don't think it really brings the prices down unless we see some sort of a quick resolution or quick change to the status quo. You know, I've seen some oil industry analysts put that at about a month that, okay, you know, whatever impact this release has buys us about a month. And if nothing has changed or gotten better in the supply chain by then, we're going to be kind of right back to where we were and talking about whether there's a need for another release or, you know, some other solution.
Well, beyond the fuel, I guess, would be a question I would have. Will we start seeing higher prices in other parts of travel? Will obviously airfare because of jet fuel? I'm assuming that will go up at some point, but I'll defer to you. But I'm also thinking hotels, rental cars, because of these rising energy costs.
You know, it's possible. As you said, you know, jet fuel is probably the biggest factor. And so, you know, if you haven't already booked your airfare for, you know, summer plans or spring break plans that you're planning, I would go ahead and lock that in as quickly as possible. You know, the chances that they're going to really significantly come down anytime soon are low. So, you know, the sooner you get that book, probably the better deal that you'll get on that. Other prices aren't as directly impacted by energy costs. I mean, certainly hotels have to, you know, heat, but I mean, it's summertime, mm-hmm. So it's not as big of an issue. You know, there could be some impact on that. But again, even when we saw prices higher, you know, it's not always a direct reflection of, you know, do higher prices discourage people from taking trips? People find a way to still take a trip. And there's still a huge interest in traveling. What we'll see is people adjusting their travel plans to accommodate for those higher prices. So maybe they'll drop a day off their trip as a way to save money, or maybe they'll, you know, alter destinations. They'll stay at a less expensive, you know, a 3-star hotel instead of a 4-star, or, you know, do more fast food along the way instead of sit down restaurants, things like that, you know, that can accommodate, you know, especially if you're talking about road trips and automobile based travel. Even at record high prices, fuel costs are still one of the smaller portions of your travel budget. Yeah. And so it is one of the things that you can adjust and absorb by making other changes in your travel plans.
Nick Jarmus is our guest. He's Regional Director of Public Affairs for AAA Wisconsin. When we talk about gas prices, people with electric cars go, well, thank goodness I have an electric car. I don't have to worry about that. How are those people faring when it comes to charging costs across not only Wisconsin, but as you get out in the rest of the country?
Well, we are seeing average EV charging station costs going up, certainly not to the same degree that we've seen gas go up. But, you know, electricity still largely is dependent upon fossil fuel generation in this country. So, you know, there's sort of a you know, indirect impact. You know, the amount of costs that go into generating that electricity is going up in a lot of places, you know, because remember, the Straits of Hormuz, you know, there's not just oil that's flowing through there, there's also natural gas that comes through there. And again, it's not something that we consume domestically or import from there, but that is also a global market where disruptions in supply chains.
Nick, you're
anywhere on the globe.
We're losing your connection, so unfortunately we're going to have to let you go, but we appreciate your time. We appreciate the advice. Nick Jarmus is the Regional Director of Public Affairs for AAA Wisconsin. Nick, thanks very much for being here. Have a great weekend. It's probably the winds. The winds are messing with everybody's internet today and getting everything
yes.
crazy, but we appreciate it.
Appreciate you.
And thanks again, Nick. Well, this is, it isn't great news, but
no.
I forgot that we got up to almost $5.
Yeah.
I know that was going to be the tipping point when that was happening. As I think back, people were like, I'm not paying $5.
Right.
I'm not paying $5. And now we got close where it was getting close to $2. So all of a sudden for it to jump.
Yes.
Jump again. But we do have to remember, last year it was about the same price. This mm-hmm. is the time of year where gas always goes up a little. It doesn't make it any easier.
No.
But it does. It's just, like I said, it's happening so fast.
It
that
is.
Was the thing. You
yes.
know, 2 weeks ago, gas was almost a dollar cheaper.
Yes. Yes. And Tiffany in River Falls chiming in this morning, listening on 93.5 The Tap out of Eau Claire. She says in River Falls area, it's about $3.49 a gallon right now. Yeah. And I think the big question, as Nick alluded to, is where is the I don't want to say bottom because we're not going down. Where is the top, right?
Yeah.
Depending on where this conflict, how long this conflict continues to play out, considering we don't know when it's going to stabilize. I think that's going to be the real question is, will we actually max out where we did in the past, or will there be some sort of resolution before then? Those are the underlying questions.
Well, we have an update on our NIL discussion from the other day. That's exciting. We will get to that after this. And we've got a whole lot more to cover in the final hour of Daybreak. I'm Brian.
I'm Jamie Martinson. It's 8:19. You are listening to the Civic Media Network.
You're listening to Civic Media. Stay up to date on the latest news and information for your local community and Wisconsin by signing up for our free email newsletter. Visit civicmedia.us/email to get started.
Wisconsin wakes up here. Back to Daybreak with Brian and Jamie.
What a great song this morning. It's 8:22 right now. Thank you so much for joining us. If you're listening in Richland Center on WRCE or in La Crosse on WLCX or even Wisconsin Rapids on WFHR, thank you so much for joining us on Daybreak. I am Jamie Martinson.
And I'm Brian Noonan. Wherever you're listening, it will be so much more fun and you'll feel so space age if you download the free Civic Media app. Yes, come into the 29th
century. Now
with
it, hip, like you're, you know, one of the
yes.
cool kids.
Oh, man, it's free. Don't cost nothing. You get that app. You can listen to our show whenever you want. You can take us wherever you want. You can listen to podcasts. That's fun. You can get updates on the weather, which will come in handy over the weekend. And then if you're like just so depressed by the news and the weather, you can listen to some music from one of our fine music stations. It's all in one. And did I mention? Don't cost nothing. So get it.
We love free stuff. We love free stuff. And also, you're going to want to have that app Monday morning because, you know, you're going to have a chance to qualify for some daily cash prizes and also a grand prize with our multi-state text to win contest. It's going to be a good time. And I'm telling you, you're going to want the app because that's the only way you can qualify for. Yeah. I'm going to tease this even a little bit more, Brian.
Wow.
$200 in cash is what we're giving out daily. Whoa.
Every day?
Every day somebody is going to win.
Just for like 1 day though, right?
No, every day for two.
Every day.
For 10 days. Wow. $200 in cash is what people can win.
You do the math, Parker. That's a lot.
And the app is free.
That's at least $200.
The app is free.
A day.
So
the app is free. Yeah. The $200 is a gift if you win the multi-state.
Right.
Multi-state,
yes.
More than one. Yes. Don't get upset. There's going to be more than just you entering, but you can enter if you have the app.
That's right.
Wednesday, on this very program, we are at the cutting edge of all things cultural and newsy. We had a conversation about Assembly Bill 1034. That sounds official. That had moved on to the Senate for approval. But the bill, what the bill would do is place policies in statute and provide funding to help the University of Wisconsin navigate changes in college sports, allowing student athletes to make money off their name, image, and likeness, or NILs. There's been a little bit of movement since Wednesday. Here's what Tim Sheehy, the former president of Metropolitan Milwaukee Association of Commerce, had to say when he joined us earlier in the week.
If we don't modernize the law, it handicaps UW-Madison and other NCAA schools in Wisconsin from dealing with their student athletes. You know, they want to require third-party disclosure so they know what the student athletes are doing. They want to bring the law in Wisconsin in line with what the NCAA was requiring. But I think the most interesting and important piece of the legislation is it provides $15 million to UW-Madison and then a couple hundred thousand to UWM and to UW-Green Bay that they can use to support their student athletes. In other words, the money goes in to relieve debt service on athletic facilities, but it frees up money for the universities to deploy towards their student athletes. And, you know, everybody says, oh, this is about the football players. Well, it is in part, but football revenue accounts at UW-Madison for about 80% of the athletic department revenue. That revenue supports another 600 student athletes on 12 women's teams and 11 men's teams. So it covers a wide range of support for student athletes. And then importantly, there's the economic impact that comes from that. If you look at just UW-Madison, I think some 2 million visitors accounted for $750 million in economic impact. So it's not only a competition issue for the university, but it's also an economic development issue for the state of Wisconsin.
And a little shameless plug there, Brian, if you want to hear more about what Tim had to say, if you're watching this bill, go over to civicmedia.us, check out all of our podcasts, and you can definitely get more, right? But
yes.
This is a fascinating bill, and I'll say this. There is a lot of gray area, I think, for me personally, with the NIL and through the NAACP. But according to written testimony, a little background on what we're talking about here, starting in fiscal year 2026, this settlement will add an expected $20.5 million in annual expense to the UW-Madison athletics budget to cover the cost of the revenue sharing requirements. And that settlement allows the schools to then pay athletes up to an annual cap that starts at about $20.5 million per school in the 2025 through 2026 and increases every year, potentially reaching over $32 million by 2035, which is... Wow, That, and I'm all for student athletes, right? Because some of these programs are built on some of the top student athletes. Some of these programs are built on the name recognition alone. You even look at like the U.S. women's hockey team, who had many, many Badgers on them representing.
And I'm sure their replica jerseys or sweaters rather are selling very well with those players' names on them, and those players deserve a little taste. Now, an update on what's been happening: the Joint Finance Committee voted on Tuesday, 8-5, to concur in the bill. No debate on the bill. There were a number of senators voting against it, both Republican and Democratic senators that voted against it. The Senate Government Operations, Labor, and Economic Development Committee also voted 3-2 via paper ballot on Wednesday to approve the bill, with Bradley and Senator Chris Kempenga from Delafield in opposition. Four Republicans oppose it. The bill likely is going to need Democratic support to pass in the Senate. So we will keep you updated on that, because it will be a big boon to UW sports in general.
Yeah, and not just to UW. Think about the economic impact it's going to have all across the state when you're talking jobs, tourism, people coming in to eat when they're at those games and visiting those venues. Right. All of those things play into this, which is what Tim was
better teams.
Yes, yep. Tim was referring to that when he joined us earlier this week, how it will be an economic boom for the entire state. So, gotta love a win-win.
It does sound like a win-win. What I don't understand is, after the break, we're going to talk about something that I think is just a made-up term. I don't know who thinks affordability is a thing.
Not Ron Johnson,
the Senate,
surprise.
No, they're going to pass a housing bill to improve access and affordability, even though that's a myth. Affordability is a myth.
That's right.
I don't know.
I told you.
It's Daybreak.
I told you Rojo was in the news. It's 8:29. I'm at Jamie Martinson. This is a Civic Media Network.
To more of Daybreak with Brian and Jamie.
It's 8:35 right now. We hope that you are having a great morning. Of course, keeping an eye on the weather as the winds continue to... I'm going to use the worst word, because I hate it when people say it, because it's such a... howl. They're howling across the state.
I was wondering if that's where you were going to go.
I don't want to, because I wanted to use something more witty, but just like this presidential administration, nothing else was coming to mind, so I trotted out the same word everybody else always does. But they really are truly howling, and so please take it easy out there today. Keep an eye on the weather if you do have travel plans this weekend. The winds are just the start of it. Obviously, watching a system come through that could dump a whole lot of snow on us. I know John in Oshkosh chimed in on the text line this morning from ISS, saying he was very disappointed that he'd already put the snowmobile away with, you know, potentially a foot of snow in some places.
Yeah.
But he does still have the snowblower out. So that's good. That's
good.
Accessible.
Yeah, if you've put that stuff away, get it back out. This is storm. When we talked to Mace
Michaels
earlier,
Mace
Michaels, which is, I'm sure, That's a radio name, right?
Yes.
I was going to say, that's his mom and dad didn't give. That's not his government name.
No, I'll tell you what it is
good.
Off the air.
Okay. It's Herman Melville. No, that's somebody else. Anyway, I don't know why that came in. But the point of the story is, this was storm number one, and that's going to dissipate pretty soon. Storm number two is the one that you're going to have to worry about, and it's going to bring not only a terrific amount of snow, but then low temperatures, low wind chills.
Maybe some freezing rain as things fluctuate and change. So we're going to get a whole
mixed
bag.
And you know what else it's going to bring, Jamie? What I can't wait for? Ill-informed tweets from the president and his ilk going,
whatever happened to the global warming? That's a foot of snow there in, what's his, March?
Yeah,
I guess the globe ain't warmer where you are.
Shut up. Understand environment and climate, you clown. Anyway, speaking of clowns, there's your segue into a Ron Johnson story. But the U.S. Senate passed a major bipartisan housing bill by a vote of 89-10. It's aimed at making housing more affordable, because remember, Parker, you won't remember this, but people like in my parents' generation, owning a home was the American dream. And yes. if you worked hard and you didn't have to be rich to own a home, you could just have a good steady job and you could buy a house and you could live out that
you
American dream.
You could have a
dream.
Home and shop at Kohl's all in the same
day. Oh my gosh. And you might be able to have a car and your spouse could stay home.
Yes.
You could do all that with one income.
It was
Well,
amazing.
Those days are gone.
Yeah.
But now affordability has been under fire, you know, that it's made up. But this bill is called the 21st Century Road to Housing Act. And lawmakers from both parties say the bill is addressing a nationwide housing shortage where home prices and rents have risen faster than many people's incomes, which if you've tried to buy or rent something recently, you know is absolutely true.
Yeah, but trying to find housing right now is, I don't envy anybody who is in that spot.
Madison is crazy
it is
expensive.
Really expensive here in Madison. Now, this particular bill that was actually a bipartisan introduction of Elizabeth Warren and, oddly enough, Tim Scott, which I've never seen those two pair up, so I find that fascinating. But it would also expand how federal housing funds can be used, allowing more money to go toward building affordable homes as well as rental units. And what I actually particularly love about this bill is it gives local governments more flexibility to address housing shortages in ways that fit their specific communities instead of applying the same rules everywhere. Amazing how that works, because what works in rural Wisconsin probably doesn't work so well in Milwaukee and vice versa. So
Correct.
It's like there was a little forethought going into that. Cindy chiming in over in Appleton asking, would a living wage help? Yes, absolutely. But baby steps, Cindy. We've got to get there first. And you know, they could barely agree on affordable housing. You know, there's no way the Democrats and the Republicans are agreeing on a living wage anytime soon. But another provision of this law would also allow banks to invest more in affordable housing projects, which supporters say could increase the supply of lower cost housing. It would also remove limits on some public housing programs, allowing more units to receive private financing through Section 8 to help repair and also improve aging housing. You know, anytime we're talking about affordable housing for people, I'm always going to be on board. We live in a time when, as you said, it has gotten to the point where there's a lot of people who literally have to choose between paying mortgages and paying bills or buying groceries or even medicines, because it's just gotten that out of hand.
And if you work hard and have, you know, a regular job, you should be able to afford rent on an apartment. It doesn't have to be the best apartment, but it also shouldn't have to be in a crack house somewhere where you're worried about your safety every minute. This is the part I like, and it was the controversial section of this bill, because we've all seen this happening not only across Wisconsin, but across the country. The bill targets large corporate investors that buy single-family homes, which, according to some lawmakers, drives up prices and makes it harder for families to buy houses. It also makes it much harder to rent, because these companies buy them. They have a monopoly. They charge whatever they want, and that's the deal. And it does artificially drive up those levels, because instead of being just you and your realtor trying to sell your house and you go back and forth and you can negotiate, you know how it all works. Well, now these corporate entities own it, and hey, this is, you want to buy it, this is what it costs.
And what I think is fascinating is here in the state of Wisconsin, we actually saw the state legislature take a stab at this themselves.
Yes.
And it was on manufactured and modular housing, basically those lots, right? Where the same sort of thing is happening, where people are going in, they're buying it, and then all of a sudden, an affordable way of living, the manufactured or modular homes, all of a sudden your rent for your land, your spot that you rent, is double or triple what it was, because the same thing is happening in that faction of housing as well. So I agree. If we can get rid of some of the corporate money in even housing, I think that definitely helps. Under this proposal, companies that own 350 or more single-family homes would actually face restrictions, and they might have to sell some of those homes to individual buyers after renting them out for a set number of years, because you should not have a monopoly on housing. That is not something that should happen.
Now, Jamie, we mentioned at the beginning this had something to do with Ron Johnson. I can only imagine he was 100% behind this bill.
No. Nope. Thank you, Parker. Yes. This was this is being called one of the largest housing reform efforts in an entire generation. And Ron
Johnson. Well, then,
Johnson,
why be on board?
Ron Johnson of Wisconsin was one of the 10 senators who voted against this bill. now, mind you, the reason that Ron Johnson decided to vote against this bill is because of that corporate housing loophole that they are trying to close. Mm. He was not on board with the fact that we were not going to allow corporations to go in and just swoop up homes and allow them to buy, sell, rent. He could not get on board with that.
Clarify for me, because sometimes I feel like I'm slow.
Okay.
So Ron Johnson has taken the sides of big corporations over average Wisconsinites?
Yes, that is correct. That is 100% correct.
I was
correct.
Wrong, but I knew I was not.
Just like he's done in the tariff fight, just like he's done with the big, beautiful bill in all of his votes there, he has sided with this administration, and he has sided with corporate America once again.
I would love to speak, and I mean this genuinely, to supporters of Ron Johnson. What makes this guy palatable? 855-75-CIVIC, 855-752-4842. And I don't mean that in a facetious way, and I'm not going to bombard you with, I hear this, and I read this, and I live through this, and I go, why do people support him? What has he done to better your life in Wisconsin, as opposed to, in the last race, it was Mandela Barnes who ran against him. So, but leave Mandela out of it. Just what has Ron Johnson done to make your life better? I don't know. Anybody's welcome to, if you have something, by all means, let me know.
I mean, right now, as we talked earlier in this program, if you joined us, instead of voting on this and putting some time and some effort into finding out more about this, finding out how this is a bill, how it could help actual families. Again, the largest housing reform effort in a generation. He is spending time going on news networks yesterday talking about ending the filibuster, even though he knows that's not going to possibly happen.
Right.
What? It doesn't make any sense to me.
It doesn't unless you just go to the base level and say it's all about staying in power. Ron Johnson and the rest of the Republicans want to stay in power. Where in the meantime, home prices in Wisconsin have increased about almost 4% to nearly 8% over the last year. Some regions in this state, including Southeast Wisconsin, have seen price increases around 10%. A year and a half ago, I was looking at maybe renting something in the Kenosha area.
Mm-hmm.
Oh my God, prices were crazy, no shade against Kenosha, but I didn't think the prices were in line with what was there.
And I think that's just it. That's what's happening, right? Because the housing inventory in Wisconsin is so tight right now, meaning there are very few homes available for buyers and even renters. So what you're seeing is these landlords, these companies, sometimes they're private, but they're adjusting to make sure that they can compete. And, honestly, if you're a private landlord and you're watching what the companies are doing, you're kind of like, okay, if they can do it, I can do it.
Yeah.
I don't blame them one bit. But homes in Wisconsin.
Well, I do. I just think they're greedy. But
homes in Wisconsin are currently staying on the market for about 67 to 90 days on average before they're selling, which is it's a long time. And here's the question. I mean, I'm going to go into back in my day, but we bought our first house when we were in our early 20s, right?
Yeah.
And we, not a great house, but we bought our first house because you got to start somewhere. It needed a lot of work. Even then.
And that was a thing. You had to buy a house. You bought a house.
We did, right? And even then, we'll be married 23 years this April. Even then, our interest rate was only at about 4%. Right.
Yeah.
And now you look at if people go to try to buy a home now, I don't even know what the interest rate is because we currently rent. But I know that we have friends who are looking who are somewhere in the 6.5% to 7% range, which at that point it feels with the price of the housing. And once you tack on your insurances and your escrows and all of that, it just feels out of reach. And you feel like all you're doing is working to have a place to live. And that's not how people want to go about their lives, even though you need a place to live. So it's obviously a catch-22 that they've got us in right now.
Well, we can thank Ron Johnson for backing. Oh, wait, no, again, he did not back us at all. He is one of the 10 senators who voted against the bill. We will follow the progress of this. And again, a very nice acronym, the 21st Century Road to Housing Act.
You know, so, hey, at least there were 89 people who got on board and somebody's trying to do something about it.
Yeah, somebody. And, you know, those 10, wrong side of history, but that doesn't stop those kind of votes from coming all the time around here. All right, listen, when we come back, it is time to start wrapping things up. We do it on Friday.
Yes.
It's we leave you with some uplifting stories, some happy stories. The Dairyland Diaries are coming, and it's a nice cross-section. No theme this week, but a nice cross-section of happy stories from around Wisconsin. At least we think they're happy stories.
They are. And we all need some happy stories right now because, boy, it's better than talking about Ron Johnson thing not wanting you to afford anything. It's 8:48 right now. You are listening to Daybreak. I am Jamie Martinson.
And I'm Brian Noonan. And this is the Civic Media Network.
You're listening to Civic Media. Find the latest news, information, and archives of all your favorite shows on the Civic Media website, civicmedia.us.
Right now, thank you so much for joining us this morning. Well, that doesn't get you ready for a Wisconsin weekend. I don't know what will. I'm always ready for Dairyland Diaries. This is a great segment.
Dairyland Diaries, if this is your first Friday, we do it on Friday, last segment of the show. Kick your weekend off with, if not a laugh, at least a little smile. No stories about politicians betraying you. No stories about legal conundrums. Just stories that from around the state that make you feel good. Like the first one, Milwaukee County Zoo welcomes a baby greater kudu. I just like the way that's said. So the greater kudu family at the Milwaukee Zoo has grown. In a blog post, the zoo announced that Bashetta, a male calf, was born January 25th to mother Imani and father Hassani. The calf's name means born on Sunday in the Yoruba language. He weighed nearly 38 pounds at birth. In addition to nursing on his mother's milks, Bashetta has begun to taste hay and alfalfa, according to the zoo. He is the first kudu calf born at the Milwaukee County Zoo since his sister Chula was born there in August of 2023. Now, you might be saying, Brian, this is all well and good, but I don't know what a kudu is. That's why we're here. Native to Nigeria and surrounding parts of Africa, greater kudu are a species of large woodland antelope. Males have spiral horns that are nearly 4 feet tall.
Ooh.
So congratulations
to the happy family.
To Imani and Hassani for the birth of Bashetta.
I love it. And now it makes me want to take a trip to the zoo, obviously, when the temperatures warm up and there's not a foot of snow on the ground. But in other stories from across the state in Dairyland Diaries, the winner and two runner-ups of the World Championship Cheese Contest, which was held in Madison from March 3rd through the 5th, have officially been announced, Brian. This is very exciting because we do love our cheese. 25 countries and 34 U.S. states and territories were represented in the 2026 World Championship Cheese Contest with entries submitted from across 148 different classes. I didn't know there was that much cheese. Wisconsinites took home 45 first place awards, followed by New York with 8 and Vermont with 7. I would be very disappointed if Wisconsin did not do that well at the World Championship Cheese Contest. Yeah. Now, there are a few companies that place best of class in the following.
There's 145 of them. We didn't have a chance to list them all.
No.
So
I'm just going to do a couple highlights. Burnett Dairy Cooperative of Grantsburg for provolone, mild and aged. There was also the Decatur Dairy Inc. of Broadhead for open class cheese curds.
Open class cheese curds.
What does that mean? What is an open class cheese curd? Nasonville Dairy of Curtis for open class cheese curds flavored edition. And I love that. And the Lake Country Dairy / the Schumann Cheese of Turtle Lake for Asiago cheese as well.
Asiago is my favorite.
Oh, Asiago is such a good cheese. Love it. Love it.
Love good cheese. So congratulations to all the fine cheesemakers in Wisconsin for representing the dairy state as well.
Hopefully there were a lot of crackers going around that weekend too.
Frank, if we're not live covering the World Championship Cheese Contest next year, you are fired.
Right? I feel like I want to taste test.
Don't yes, you shouldn't we shouldn't yes. we both be wandering around yes. eating cheese, just getting bloated, and then
and I
want to
know
sidewalk?
What it, and I have questions about open class cheese curds.
Open class, yeah. Is that just any
Isn't
cheese
there a
curd
cheese place down
around?
There on State Street? There's some kind of cheese.
Oh yeah,
it's
they
like
got
cheese
the big
world
wheels.
Or something.
They got
yeah.
the big wheels
oh, yeah,
in the
cheese
window.
World.
Yeah. yeah. Okay. All right.
I don't know if that's not the name. It should be.
It should be
All
definitely
right,
the name.
Let's go from cheese. What goes well with cheese in Wisconsin besides beer and? Bratwurst, correct. Dr. Pepper flavored sausages are coming to America's favorite sausage, Johnsonville. And Dr. Pepper, they're linking up for a launch of a fizzy glizzy.
Ooh.
Mm-hmm, you heard me. According to the Sheboygan Falls-based national sausage brand, in a press release, they said it is a culinary innovation, or is it a sign of the apocalypse? That debate is already underway, but one thing is certain. People are talking, and America is ready to take a bite. You could quibble with that last part of the statement, but I don't know. The sausage was inspired by Dr. Pepper's original 23-flavor blend. Johnsonville collaborated closely with Dr. Pepper to translate the soda's one-of-a-kind flavor into its time-honored sausage, an idea inspired by the brand's long-standing role as a go-to ingredient for flavoring and marinating meats. And probably a few bong rips in the idea room.
Sure.
Went, dude, we got... That's it, man. Dr. Pepper and a sausage. Glizzy. Fizzy glizzy? You heard me. A Johnsonville rep said, quote, reaction to the idea of a soda-inspired sausage has been a little polarized, but we hope people hang out, give it a try, and let us know what they think, love them or hate them. I will try it.
I was going to say, it feels like you got to try it once, right?
You got to have it. We got to do a cookout with some fizzy glizzies.
And now I want a fizzy glizzy involved in the Brewer sausage race during home games. I'm just saying, throwing that out there. But if finally, this is such a great story as well. Women's flag football is growing, and there are a number of Wisconsin colleges and even some high schools, as we've learned, that are adding it as a varsity sport. UW Oshkosh mm-hmm. is one of at least 10 Wisconsin colleges that have added or even announced plans to add women's flag football, at least according to Collegiate Flag Football, an online publication tracking the sport's growth. I didn't know there was a thing, but I learned something in Dairyland Diaries.
Fantastic.
So the Oshkosh Titans opened their season on February 25th. Other colleges sponsoring women's flag football include UW Stout, Marion University, Ripon College, UW Parkside, Mount Mary University, Lakeland University, Wisconsin Lutheran College, Beloit College, and Bryant and Stratton College. Some of the schools are already competing. Others plan to officially launch their teams in the next few years. Women's flag football is also gaining momentum nationally, receiving the designation of being an emerging sport by the NCAA. Right. It also is slated to make its debut at the 2028 Winter Olympics in Los Angeles. The Titans dropped their first contest, unfortunately, to Aurora 34-0 on February
25th. Wow, a shellacking.
That was a shellacking. My goodness.
Shellacking.
But that's okay. They're out there. They're competing. Yeah. I love it. I love a good game of flag football.
That's Dairyland Diaries for this week. Feel free to jump around all weekend with a little smile on your face. Jamie, we have done it again.
We did.
We have completed an entire week of shows, unscathed, only physically, but not mentally. And we will be back to do it all again on Monday. Thank you for listening. Thanks for being a part of the show. Tell your friends, get the Civic Media app over the weekend, because Monday is a multi-state tech...
The national news cycle never stops, but it can be hard to find news about your local community. Civic Media is dedicated to providing quality local and state news coverage across Wisconsin. With the Civic Media app, you can get notifications about local stories that matter to you and your community. Find the free Civic Media app in your phone's app store and choose notifications from the menu to tell us what kind of news you want to hear about.